The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, all our listeners are dying to know, I'm sure, how your mate's stag weekend down in London went. How much do you remember of it?
Well, most of it. I'm a little worse for wear, but I still do remember it. But yeah, we had a really good time, thanks. A couple of days down in London, the bank balance isn't looking too healthy, and I'm not feeling 100% at the moment. But thankfully this morning I had some good J-League highlights to catch up with. So yeah, it's getting me through it.
Fair enough then. And most importantly, which way do your mates think this title race is going to go in J1?
Oh, they've all swung to Yokohama F Marinos, I think, after this weekend.
Yeah, fair enough. And all right, so yes, patrons, stay tuned for some behind the scenes footage of Sam's stag weekend. Patreon exclusive episode coming up soon if we can get the footage released from the buck, the stag himself. We'll wait and see on that. But in the meantime, yes, things are looking very rosy for Yokohama F Marinos these days. And joining us on this week's episode to chat all things YFM is Stuart Woodward. Stuart, welcome back to the pod, and how are you?
Oh, very well, thank you. It's been quite a while, I think, hasn't it?
It has about 4.5 months, Stuart. And well, obviously, we had Sean Galbraith on the last couple of times we were focused on Yokohama F Marinos, mostly around the exit of your former manager Ange Postecoglou, and obviously Kyogo Furuhashi also joining Celtic from Kobe. We got Sean's updated thoughts on Yokohama F Marinos at that point in time. So it has been a long time between podcast appearances for you, but as we say, things are looking terrific. And I don't know, are you getting echoes of 2019 here? It's been a terrific run, an unbeaten run as well that your side's been on in the last couple of months.
Yes, it does seem that we've everything has come together, and especially catching up all those matches where we had so many in hand to catch up, and almost the results, everyone came through apart from the draw with Shimizu, and I thought that might, you know, that might have been a little bit of a setback at the time, but we just seem to have ploughed on since then with Nagoya, Oita and Sendai scoring 5 goals in both of those matches, which really was the other thing, that if it was going to come right down to the very last day, the we were quite far behind on goal difference, and we've almost caught up with goal difference too. So going back to the 2019, I don't think we were in such a good position at this time in the year, but that does leave more time for things to go wrong. But in terms of how the team look, they in 2019, things, it seemed coming together. Like the whole, you know, way of playing was really paying off, and they were coming together. But now, you know, for most of the season, they've been looking quite good, and the team look really happy, and so it's quite positive. Like a couple of months ago, I would have said it was very difficult to catch up with Kawasaki, but everything is up to Kawasaki now, really. If we keep playing as we do.
Marinos have been really impressive in the way that they've gone from various different managers this season. What were your expectations once Kevin Muscat was announced and came in, and how has he fared, do you think, in the first kind of month that he's been with the club?
Yeah, well, I think from the very start, I think he was probably told, and also, you know, his own feelings, that he didn't need to change very much, because we were, you know, already in a good position at that time. Like, had he been coming in, you know, after a little bit of a case where they got rid of the manager, then it would be a totally different situation. But just keeping going as the previous caretaker manager had done beforehand, and then also, like, I felt with a lot of the player interviews, the players were really on board for playing exactly as they were playing before, and they knew what to do. Like, they, it was almost, you know, they weren't saying they didn't need a manager, but they just were so confident in, okay, we know how to play and this is no problem. But I wasn't really familiar with Kevin Musker at all. And, you know, just been catching up. And even today I was watching some of his TV appearances on Australia and in Australia. And it's quite a funny character, really. And on the field was quite a scary character too. So I would almost venture to say that they look a bit better than they did under the final few matches where Angie was in charge. And I don't think that was like any criticism of the manager, but you know, there might have been at that time a little bit of worry because the rumours were out there that Angie was leaving. But once he made the move, and you know, they just seemed to buck up and have been doing very well. And I would wonder as well about Kevin Muscat with his you know, coming from a defensive role in his own playing career, whether he would have more to say about the defensive side and to tighten up. And the other thing, like, notice sometimes the substitutions, like in the Sendai match, it was quite a defensive lineup in the final. In the final minutes, like, for example, they didn't bring on Nakagawa, but you know, brought on, you know, more defensive players, and that worked out well because they all go forward anyway, but they're all very strong in defence, and it wasn't even as if we would, you know, have a you know, be in danger of losing in the last few minutes. So yeah, I'm quite happy, and he seems an interesting character. So yeah, it's no complaints.
Yeah, he's taken over and things are going extremely smoothly, to put it mildly. It's, 12 unbeaten now for F. Marinos. The last loss was all the way back in the middle of May away at Kashima many, many moons ago. And yes, the gap at the top is now down to 4 points after Yokohama F. Marinos won 5-0 at home at Mitsuzawa over Sendai on Saturday. That result, coupled with a 1-1 draw for Frontale away at Hiroshima, cut the deficit by a further 2 points. So, Sam, I'll come to you for this one. I mentioned echoes of 2019 to Stuart there, and I mean, one of the key ingredients for me, and obviously I still have sleepless nights about it as an FC Tokyo supporter, is the impact that Eric made in the last 12 games of 2019, when F. Marinos were, you know, famously down in fifth or sixth in the table. Eric came in late in the season, started all of the last 12 games, and netted 8 goals to help his side across the line, and obviously on that last day, famously put FC Tokyo to the sword 3-0 to seal the title. And along a similar vein, and we've mentioned it a couple of times in the last month or so, Leo Ciara's season has finally gotten up and running. He didn't make his F. Marinos debut until match day 11, but since then has netted 7 goals in 14 appearances, 5 of those, of course, coming in the last 2 games, when, as Stuart's also mentioned, they've scored 5 in both, at home against Oita, winning 5-1, and then on Saturday, beating Sendai 5-0. So, yeah, Leo Ciara's impact, obviously, especially in the past 2 games, has been very stark, and, yeah, echoes of Eric's impact for you?
To a degree, I think Eric's a better player than Leo Ciara's on the whole, but you can't argue with the impact Ciara's had in the last couple of games, especially some of the goals and the way he's taken them have been absolutely sublime. So if he can get on a good run of form and a good run of confidence heading into the final stretch of the season, then yeah, it could absolutely be a catalyst for F. Marinos. I think he has been able to develop a really key partnership, I think, with Maeda and Elbert. They all seem to work very well together. They've got that interplay, which is what Marinos had previously, when you would say it was Eric and Nakagawa with Marcos Jr. And I think Mateus as well at that point. So yeah, it is looking a really good machine up front for Marinos. Leo Ciara, I still think there's a bit more to come from him. He's scored 5 goals in the last 2 games, but with the greatest of respect to the opponents, there are Oita and Vigalta Sendai were quite generous towards him, so let's see if he can take that on. I mean, Sagan Tosu on Wednesday is a very big test for this Marinos side. I know last week, Alan was saying it was a fairly simple-ish, on paper at least, run of games that Kevin Muscat has had to start with, and that this seemed to be a lot more testing with Tosu, then Kashima, and then two more away games against Hiroshima and Nagoya to come. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting, but Marinos are absolutely on a roll, and Leo Sierra is scoring goals, so if he can continue that, then yeah, they're going to be very tough to stop, just like that 2019 team.
Indeed, and Stuart, I've known you for quite a few years now, and when I asked you on the podcast, I wasn't expecting you to come in all fire and brimstone, and saying that you're going to romp away with the league. But I mean, at this stage of proceedings, having cut the deficit as much as you have, with still over 10 games to go, is there any concern? I mean, I don't want to we have to kind of look at it through balanced eyes. So is there any concern that your side might have peaked a little bit too soon? I mean, you obviously timed your run to absolute perfection in 2019, but at the same time, you must be absolutely brimming with confidence, seeing how not only how well your side have played, but also Kawasaki's failure to break down their opponents and win in their past two games, when they've ultimately left frustrated with a draw. And you could even argue at this stage of proceedings, with obviously that blockbuster to come on the final day of the season, that to a neutral, they might even be leaning in your direction in terms of a favourite for the title race, as the form that the two sides are in at the moment.
Yeah, it would be nice to go into the last match comfortably, like, even at the very start of the season, when the schedule was announced, looking at that last match, Yokohama versus Kawasaki, that just said, oh gosh, that could be the decider. But then, we got beaten by them in our very first match. So things didn't look so rosy at that point. And I wasn't very confident early on in the season. But one of the things is, like, the players as well. The same question went to the players today. One of the players today, and I was reading, and they had this whole mentality of just, we're going to keep playing as we do. And if we do, the results will come. So they don't worry about the other teams. They would just worry about how well they play, the way that they want to play. And like as you say, like, anything can happen in the next however many games there are. Almost half a season, isn't it, to go. But like, there are some kind of bogey matches definitely coming up. Like Kashima is always difficult. Hopefully that will come out well. Even Cerezo, I don't have any good memories really of playing against them. And even before the last match, we play Kobe. So Kobe might be in a good form. So it's not going to be an easy roll in towards the end. It would be nice to have FC Belmare and at the very last couple of matches. But we're going to meet them pretty soon too.
Yes, indeed. All right, so we'll run through the goals from Mitsuzawa on Saturday before we switch our focus. Sure. To Kawasaki's results. But yeah, before the first goal went in, Stuart, there was a confusion reigning at Mitsuzawa, with the complications arising from somebody failed to switch the VAR machine on. This week in VAR. This week in VAR. This week.
Well, yes, the match suddenly stopped, and the referee was pacing around, and there was for a long time no announcement about what had happened, and so the players took a water break, and this was before the official water break, and I was chatting online to my friends who were watching the match on the TV, it came out that VAR had broken. So, maybe they'd got the spinning wheel of death on the screen with the video screen buffering constantly. We don't know exactly what happened. It was a very windy day, so who knows, maybe their special antenna wobbling on the roof or something like that. But I think there was the announcement later was that they carried on without VAR. You know, once they'd got the referee's permission, and there was a drop ball, and the match carried on. But it was a very long, like I think it was 6 minutes extra time at the end of the first half. So it was just a puzzling wait, and who knows what the regulations are if a VAR is broken. So maybe they've been making it up as they go along.
This week in VAR. This week in VAR. This week. Yes, indeed. All right. So after that, then after that confusion, Leo Sierra gave F. Marinos a 25th minute lead when he outjumped Jakub Slavic and the Sendai defender Hisashi Appiah to Ryuta Koike's hoofed ball into the box. The Takiwata almost made it to 5 minutes before the break, but he struck the outside of the post with his shot from inside the D. On the hour, Kota Mizunuma came off the bench for his 300th J1 appearance, and a minute later he rolled the ball to Leo Sierra, who was smashed in a brilliant strike from 20 yards to make it 2-0, and that opened the floodgates as F. Marinos scored 3 in 8 minutes. Sendai was suffocated in the 67th minute as relentless pressing ended with Leo Sierra squaring for Marcos Junior to make it 3, and then the number 9 finished off his hat trick when Marcos Junior returned the favour with Vigalta caught cold on the counter. The icing on the cake came deep into stoppage time when Jun Amano turned in the 5th with the last kick of the game. So Sam, I mean, that's just a perfect encapsulation of the form that F. Marinos are in, and the effectiveness of their pressing in that goal in the 67th minute, where, you know, Sendai passed the ball around the back for a good 25-30 seconds, but F. Marinos would not give up and ultimately pressed them into a mistake, and it ended up with a simple finish for Marcos Junior.
Yeah, the defence was just hounded, and eventually they got themselves into all sorts of bother, and Marinos, yeah, they pounced on that, and it's kind of just exactly what they do, and they're going to capitalise on teams that are going to try and play out from the back, and they get their goals that way, and it's just the team ethic, the pressing, it's just that work rate all together. It's not like you ever see just one player go and try and press, it's all out of balance. They all know what they're doing. They're all in a formation. And yeah, Sendai made a complete mess of it. But yeah, it's just really good to see, even at 2-0 up at that point, they're still going. Stuart mentioned that they did make a few defensive changes in this game, but it doesn't really change the mentality of the team. They're out to go and score goals. They're out to go and put the foot on the neck of the opponents, so to speak, and they kept going and doing that. So yeah, it's really positive to see, and I mean, it's not great if you're a Vigalta Sendai supporter, given where they are in the league, and then you see your team concede that sort of goal. It looks really bad on their defence, but yeah, to be honest, it is all about the quality of the press from F. Marinos and the coordination in which they do it.
And I mean, that's Ange Ball at its finest, obviously, Stuart. So that's we can see that the managers that have preceded Postecoglou have just thought, well, yeah, as we've said numerous times in the last few weeks, it ain't broke, so don't fix it. I mean, as you say yourself, they hardly need a manager when they're switched on and playing this effectively.
Yes, and that also goes back to Angie's comments at the end of the 19 season, where he said he didn't have to do much. He said everybody's just in gear and they know what to do. And I'm really kind of very interested in his coaching, having watched him here, and then like in the last few weeks watching the transformation in Celtic too, and from his kind of explanation about how he wants to play football, you could almost write it down on a postcard, like what the way he wants to play. And so you wonder how much extra, kind of secret sauce there is behind his coaching. And there's the two parts, just, okay, we want to play this way, and the way that they are playing now, and the way that Celtic are starting to play, but also his motivational, kind of skills behind that too. And so that was the worry, really, that if the players got demotivated or they didn't get on with the new manager, then that would be where things could start to fall to pieces. But that seems to be very strong too. And I think also Kevin Muscat adds a lot of the probably the mental side of it too, and just he's a very strong character. So yeah, they're definitely, you know, carrying on as before. And I even think that the very last goal was almost you could say very typical of this whole style, because there's no need for a fifth goal in the 90 plus 4 minute, and they're still pressing at it. They're still going at it. Like the poor Sendai players, you know, like they just want to go home and have a bath now. But Marinos are like, you know, and all of those little things where, you know, they'll take a corner quickly or throw in very quickly. It's just like the other side must be just ready to give up at that point, and to then just to concede another one. I think I maybe mentioned before, like Johan Cruyff was quoted as saying, you know, after we get four goals up, you aim for the crossbar just to make it more interesting.
So with that in mind, Sam, this you mentioned a Wednesday night at Tosu versus F Marinos is just going to be a pressing festival, or do Tosu only press that effectively when they're playing against FC Tokyo?
Well, they're definitely pressing effectively against FC Tokyo, but yeah, it's not just you. You're not just targeted. It is a lot of teams. I mean, we've seen them do it to Nagoya a lot to really good effect. So yeah, it's going to be a high energy, intense game. It's going to be a really good one to watch. I think first goal will probably be key into what team can really get on top of that game. But yeah, I think on paper it looks a really intriguing one, because Tosu, even though they had that little bump in the road with the manager and whatnot, they got back to it, especially at this weekend. I thought they played well from what I saw of that game, and two teams coming in form, both chasing things like the title, the ACL places. I think it'd be a really exciting game to watch. I think both teams will go for it. I can't imagine a scenario really where this Tosu side just tries to sit back and just see off F Marinos. I think they will go toe-to-toe with them, and I think it'd be a really interesting challenge for F Marinos, because it's not too often that they get a bit of their own medicine in the way that teams come out and play against them. So yeah, it's more, rather than playing against a Sendai who will like to sit back, yeah, they're going to be, it's a team that will be up in their faces. So yeah, really exciting, and an early shout for my game to watch in midweek.
Yeah, I would have thought you would be picking that one. So we, spoiler alert, we'll kill that mystery now. That's the obvious choice, and should be an absolute crackerjack. And then as you said, Stuart, Kashima at home, back at the Nissan Stadium on Saturday evening. Kashima, obviously the last team to beat you in the league before this 12 match unbeaten run. So that should be an absolutely terrific game in its own right. And I don't know, you'd be a bit melancholy to be leaving Mitsuzawa after you played your last five home games there and have won them all. Trying to do some quick math, by an aggregate of 16-1. So you've certainly enjoyed you've enjoyed things at Mitsuzawa. And COVID-19, the coronavirus, continues to have an impact not only in Japan but throughout the world. So obviously attendances are still limited at J League games. While we will have all noticed that full stadiums are back in the UK over the last couple of weeks. So you've been getting to all of the home games then, the attendances for games in Kanagawa are capped at 5,000. But I think you were mentioning in the green room that as a season ticket holder, you're pretty much locked in to get a ticket when you want one.
Yes, the way it works is that, like, the ticket holders are able to buy the tickets before the fan club members and the general public. And I think, like, I usually log on pretty much as soon as the tickets become available on the day, and I haven't had a problem. And there's been times when I've been an hour late, and I've been able to get a seat, but it's very difficult to choose your position, and because the behind the goal is strongly contested, so it's like a video game where you choose a dot from like 50 different dots, and then it says no, that one's taken, and then you choose another dot, no, that one's taken, and then finally you can find one that's free, and everybody's competing for the same areas of the stadium. But around the edges and towards the away end. Definitely get a ticket, and they're definitely sold out. If it was 10,000, then that would be Mitsuzawa full, I think, or almost full, and everybody would get a seat they wanted. Well, I think to about 5,000, because at the moment it's 50%, isn't it, as well. But at Nissan Stadium, if the regulations were to be relaxed, then it would be 10,000 and above. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon.
No, fair enough then. All right, so before we let you go, Stuart, we will go through Kawasaki's result on Saturday. They headed down to the Edeon Stadium in Hiroshima to face Sunfrecce. Sunfrecce, of course, were off last week after their home clash with Kobe was postponed due to weather concerns. Frontale were looking to bounce back after failing to break down 10-man Kashiwa last weekend, and they were looking to make amends for their draw at home against Sunfrecce in the middle of April. But for the second straight week and for the second time this season against Hiroshima, the champions ended up frustrated and with just a point to show for their efforts as this game finished 1-1. And they had to come from behind too, Kawasaki, after Yoshifumi Kashiwa, who was honoured before the game after recently making his 300th J1 appearance, gave Sunfrecce the lead just before the half hour, finishing neatly after an incisive cutback from fellow veteran Kosei Shibasaki. Leandro Damião equalised for the champions in the 73rd minute, also finishing first time from Reo Hatate's pass. So, Sam, Frontale remain unbeaten. They remain top of the table after 25 rounds, and I don't know if this is going to pass, if this is going to be their crisis for this season, two straight draws before they get back to winning ways. But have we seen in these past couple of games the impact of not having Ao Tanaka and not having Kaoru Mitoma? I mean, they've come to get used to playing without Ryota Oshima, but when you throw him into the mix as well, I mean, that's three of their best 11, most definitely, who are now out of the picture. Oshima for hopefully for just a short period of time, but I don't know. This is testing times for Toro Aniki and his side, as for the second straight game they've left frustrated.
Yeah, I think it's shown that this squad is really being stretched. And I think Taniguchi was missing as well at the weekend. He got injured in the cup. So you've got Kurumaya really as a left-back playing at centre-back. Once Tanaka is out of that midfield, although Hatate and Wakizaka are both very good players in their own right, they're both attacking midfielders. No one really does the same job that Tanaka did. He was quite box-to-box. He covered a lot of ground, and it's so difficult for either of those on their own to kind of match the levels that Tanaka was producing in that position. And Hasegawa, although he was a decent player, doesn't have that X factor that Mitoma has. So when they're in tight games, especially last week when they needed just a little bit of quality that Mitoma would usually have produced, no one was able to. And in this game, they looked a little bit out of sorts. They didn't really create too many chances. Hiroshima were reasonably comfortable, especially in the first half, and it took a long while really before Kawasaki got going. I mean, the credit to them, I suppose, for keep hanging on in there, getting that equaliser. They're still unbeaten, which is something they can cling on to. And if it is just a small blip and a couple of draws and then they get back into winning ways, then great. But yeah, this team looks like it's being stretched a little bit too far, and it's still got to play Champions League, still in the Emperor's Cup and the Louvain Cup. And I think it's starting to swing, I think, in Marinos' favour with the open schedule they've got, the kind of greater options now, it looks like, in their squad as well. It's a little bit more open, but I'm not going to rule Kawasaki out either. Over the last 18 months or so, they've been absolutely fantastic. There are still quality players in here, so yeah, but they need to get up and running a bit quicker, because this was a really disappointing display.
Yes, indeed. Well said, Sam. So, again, Stuart, I mean, we know you well in these parts, and we know you're not going to toot your own horn at Kawasaki Kawasaki's expense. I know you have a great deal of respect for them, and I'm sure you're expecting this title race to go right down to the wire as well. But I mean, you can see that this is clearly a testing time for them. So obviously that makes it even more imperative for your guys to just to carry on their good run of form and put as much pressure on them as you can at the top of the table as you whittle away their lead.
Yes, yeah, still, like as we said, we just have to keep winning matches. That's the only, catching up is great, but that does mean that the playing field is a little bit more even. Both teams have to keep on winning. It's a game of chicken, really. You know, who's going to slip up first, and so you know we could see things. Quite an exciting end to the season, right up to the last day.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so it's definitely a race in two, this J1 title race. But yeah, a few weeks ago, we were wondering if it was just going to be a foregone conclusion that Kawasaki would be romping to a second straight title, and indeed a fourth in five seasons. But F. Marinos have been absolutely terrific on this 12-match unbeaten run. And with the two more cracking games to come in the next few days, that's setting the scene for the last 10 games of the season or so to come. So, Stuart, all right, we'll leave it there before Sam and I crack on with the rest of the games from the weekend. So, yeah, terrific to catch up with you again. And, all the best to your boys. And let's hope, as we said, this title race goes right down to the wire. And we'll definitely speak again down the road.
Yes, thanks very much for having me again.
All right, thanks again to Stuart Woodward. After a quick hit of music, Sam and I will carry on with the rest of the Match Day 25 games. Welcome back. Let's begin our review of the rest of Match Day 25 at the Noivir Stadium in Kobe. Sam, this was your pick of the Match Day 25 fixtures on last week's episode. I think we both probably expected more goals than we got, but it certainly looked like an interesting game as Kobe ultimately triumphed at 1-0 over their visitors, Kashima Antlers, thanks to Hotaro Yamaguchi's goal in the 79th minute.
Yeah, it looked a relatively end-to-end game. This is another first, I think, for the podcast, but I thought Hiroki Ikura had a fantastic game in goal for Vissel. I think he made a lot of very good saves, denied Araki. There was that double one with Everaldo had a strike, and then I think Ikura may have saved it, and it may have then been blocked on the line by Kikuchi. So Kashima seemed to have kind of the advantage in the first half, but Yoshinori Muto comes on in the second half, and he's at the heart of Vissel's goal, so it's a sign of things to come for Kobe once they get Osako back, who I think who's joined training today, and then Bojan can't be too far away. So yeah, it's a positive sign for Vissel to get through this sort of tough game, not playing I don't think as well as they can do, but it's another blow for my continued thinking that Kashima are going to push on for the Champions League, because every time they start to get into a decent round of form, they then suffer a setback. So this was another one of those, but it was a hard fought, and it was a decent game, but maybe not quite as exciting as I was hoping for when I picked it last week.
Well, that's right, and it was third Kashima visiting Kobe, fifth at kickoff, but with the team so bunched up in the hunt for the ACL places, they have they've finished this game in vastly different positions. Kobe now up to fourth, and Antlers sliding three spots down to six, but obviously, just 3 points behind now third-placed Sagan Tosu. But, you mentioned Muto there. We wondered on last week's episode how many of their new forwards would be available to feature in this particular game. And, Muto came on at half-time, returning to the J-League after a six-year European adventure. The DAZN highlights package focused on him pretty much exclusively in the second half, but as you said, that's because he was at the heart of pretty much everything that Kobe did. They weren't afraid to ping balls over the top for him to run onto. He's blessed with terrific quickness, Muto, and then the goal itself came, as we said, with about 10 minutes to go, and Muto was heavily involved. He was played in over the top, down the left-hand channel, and squared across the box with the outside of his right boot. It did appear that Douglas was the intended target, but when the ball just evaded his slide, Yamaguchi's lung-busting run from midfield was rewarded when he bundled in from the edge of the six-yard box, despite the best attentions of Leo Silva, who was tracking back, but was unable to prevent Yamaguchi from getting the ball over the line. So, I don't know, Sam, at the end of the day, this is the sort of result that maybe we don't associate with Kobe, is it? I mean, a game like this, you know, if they had taken the lead with 10 minutes to go, more often than not, we'd be expecting them to cough up the lead in second-half stoppage time or something like that. So I think this result is a pretty big feather in their cap in the hunt for the ACL places. And hopefully, as we all know, you never know what you're going to get from Vissel on a week-to-week basis, but hopefully this can be the impetus for a proper push for these ACL places in the last two or three months of the season.
Yeah, it'd be very disappointing for Kobe if it wasn't, given the position they're in, the players that they now have to come in. And this was a really positive result, because it was only a couple of weeks ago where they coughed up a late goal against Kashua, where they just completely lost their mind defensively and allowed Kashua to steal the 3 points. So for them to have held on in the manner they did, they saw the game out quite professionally in that second half, and it was a really positive performance. I do like the ping. They were continuing with those ping balls over the top to Muto that worked so well for Furuhashi, and then once Muto is joined by Osaka up front, I mean, it's a mouth-watering partnership worry for the rest of the J-League, but should be really exciting to watch. And Kobe fans, I think they have to be demanding that they finish in the top three. I don't think there's too much excuse with the players that they've got there, but there are a lot of good teams, I suppose, in the hunt for those positions. And what have we got now? Like, at least five teams playing for that third place. It's really exciting going into these latter stages of the season.
Yes, indeed. And, Sapporo will be disappointed with their draw on Saturday. That's prevented them for the time being from latching on to the coattails of, the five teams in the hunt for that third spot in the table. We're going to come on to Tosu's result away at Kashiwa next, Sam. But before we do, we had a question in from one of our patrons, Daniel, who said that with the top two looking like they're going to run away with things in the last couple of months of the season, who has the best chance of grabbing the third ACL place? So we can throw a blanket over, as you said, five teams at the moment, with Tosu in third on 44, goal difference ahead of Kobe, and a point clear of Nagoya, with the Antlers and Urawa Reds 3 points further back. So, if we're focusing solely on third, with five teams in the hunt and just 3 points separating them, obviously you wouldn't put any money on any single one of them. You'd rather just set your money on fire. But, for me, we have to expect that Osaka especially, and, well, hopefully Bojan as well, are going to make some impact. So for me, they would be my favourites to finish third. As you say, their supporters have to be demanding that with the amount of firepower they're able to throw at this. But would they be yours as well? Or obviously, we know that that Antlers are a sleeping giant, and you could say the same thing about Reds. But if you were forced to say who you think is going to finish third now, who would it be?
I'd have to go with Kobe. I'd have to go with you. The options that they've got coming in, it's such a strong team. And, yeah, all over the pitch, really, especially if you're getting performances like that out of Ikura. And Kikuchi has formed a very good partnership with Vermaelen, and that was always a big issue, I thought, for Kobe. It was them defensively. They seem to have settled that. So, and I think they'll only get stronger as this season goes on. But in that whole pack, you can make an argument for anyone. I mean, Sagan Tosu have been performing above expectations all season. Even with selling Matsuoka, they've replaced them well with Koizumi and Shirasaki, and they still look a really good team. Kashima are just frustrating, because I think the squad is absolutely there. for Kashima to be in the top three. Nagoya, I know they're not everyone's not a delight to everyone, but they can sit in and defend incredibly well. And now with Fair Shock, as we'll come on to later, they've got a quality striker who can score goals. And Reds were a little bit similar to Kobe in that they've got good players that are coming in or have just come in, but they've got to try and mould those into Ricardo Rodriguez. It might click, but I think it's a little bit less likely than Kobe. So yeah, Kobe would absolutely be my favourites to finish in third, but it's still so open. It's I'm not going to be putting any money on it.
No, completely understandable. And, well, yeah, I should point out as well that, yeah, Kobe are level on points, but goal difference behind Tosu. And that said, with a game in hand, of course, after they didn't play away at Hiroshima last weekend. So if they are able to win that game whenever it's played, I don't believe it's been rescheduled as of yet, then that will be an advantage for them in the race for third, of course. All right, so, then next to the Hitachi Dai Stadium in Kashiwa then, when Tosu rocked up and took a 13th minute lead when Yuta Higuchi's free kick from 25 yards deflected off a head in the race hall wall and flashed into the net with Kim Sung-gyu completely helpless. And just past the half hour, Tomoya Koyomatsu was a Johnny on the spot to make it 2-0 to the visitors after Kim couldn't hang on to Yoshihiro Nakano's volley. In the 37th minute, Kashiwa pulled a goal back when Cristiano fired through Park Il-gyu's legs to punish Eduardo for his heavy touch 35 yards from goal in a moment that Sam won't have enjoyed. But then 10 minutes into the second half, Tosu restored their two-goal cushion when Koyomatsu got a near-post touch to Nakano's deflected cross and steered the ball past Kim. They weren't goals for the end of season DVD, Sam, but Koyomatsu does have a habit of popping up in the right place at the right time, and these type of goals are his bread and butter and are vital on this occasion for Sagan Tosu.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a right place, right time, and that's not much. You can't ask for too much more for your attacking player. And yeah, terrific. I thought the intensity from Tosu right from the start. They were right at Kashiwa from the first whistle. And, I think it was Koyomatsu actually with a chance in the first minute that was saved. But they kept going. These goals, yeah, they weren't great goals by any means. The first one, a deflected free kick. And then Koyomatsu gets a bit lucky with Kim's billing of the ball to him for his first goal, and even his second goal is a deflected cross, which kind of takes the defence out of it and allows him to nip in at the near post. So it was a touch fortunate for both Koyomatsu and Sagan Tosu, but I think they made their luck, actually. I thought in the first half they blew Kashiwa away for a good portion of that first half, and second half they didn't really look like they were coming under too much of a threat, and it didn't really look like Kashiwa we're getting back into the game. So I've got to give a lot of credit to Tosu for the way that they keep going against all the odds in this Champions League race. And yeah, they were fully deserving of the 3 points.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. What a season it's been so far for Sagan Tosu. And with a full third of it left, goodness knows how high they can... Well, obviously, third is the highest they can finish. But, yeah, that would be absolutely remarkable for a team with their budget and their... what's been going on behind the scenes there. And as you said, Sam, with selling some of the, being forced into selling some of their best players, the way that they've worked their way through this season to this point is absolutely remarkable. And, back up to third after this victory with the Kashima slipping up. Next to Nagoya, the only game that was played on Sunday in match day 25 when Grampus, who entered the match day in sixth, hosted 10th placed Fukuoka. This game was notable, Sam, for the return to the bench, and he wasn't called into action. Hopefully we will see him maybe this midweek or at the very earliest, or if not next weekend, of Mu Kanazaki. Great to see him back to fitness. And, we've bemoaned Nagoya's lack of attacking options at times throughout this season. If they can get him back fit and firing, well, at least for the last couple of months of the season, we'll give him some time to work his way back to sharpness. But that will be terrific, especially if he can form some sort of a partnership. I don't know, along the lines of Koizumi and Juncker at Reds, perhaps. We'll wait and see with Jakub Świerczok, what an impact he's made with the winner, the late winner against the Kobe in the Emperor's Cup in midweek, and then after an absolute stunner after coming on at half-time, Sam, here, 4 minutes into the second half, curling in an absolutely terrific goal from 20 yards, and that was all that Grampus needed to see off Avispa on Sunday.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the first half was a fairly non-event. I'm sure Graham Freche would have been delighted to see a right-back in Morishita playing left-wing in this game, and Kakitani still playing up front. But thankfully, in the second half, Fairshot comes on. He injects a bit of quality into the team. And yeah, they just got the ball to the edge of the area. The footwork is superb to make that space. And then just the effort. It's with such pace past Murakami. There's no chance for him to make the save there. It's a terrific goal. And if that's a sign of things to come, then, well, Nagoya have got a terrific player on their hands. And that miss a couple of weeks ago is long forgotten now, because this was a terrific goal. And from then on, Nagoya, they only need to get... If they get ahead in games, they're so difficult to break down. And Avispa really at no stage looked too... threatened Nagoya too much, and it was a fairly comfortable 1-0 in the end. But yeah, all about Svechok's goal. It was a terrific effort.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. So hopefully, as we said, a sign of things to come for Grampus, and looking forward to seeing Amu Kanazaki back on the pitch, and hopefully linking up with the Svechok in the weeks to come. All right, well, obviously Nagoya missed out on Kasper Juncker a few months ago. He made an instant impact himself after joining Urawa Reds. He's been a little bit quiet in the past few weeks, has a Juncker, and we wondered after he missed the last week's game through injury how long he might be out for, but he did return to the starting lineup for Reds when they visited Tokushima on Saturday, and he got through 90 minutes, Sam, so that will have been a relief to all Red supporters, as will the result of this game have been, I'm sure, with after a goalless first half, Takahiro Sekine finally broke the deadlock just past the hour, and that was all that Reds needed to seal a 1-0 win. I guess, you know, yet another tough lesson on J1 life for Vortis to take, but for Reds, an absolutely vital 3 points, as we said earlier, as they join, well and truly join the battle for that race for the ACL spots.
Yeah, very much so, and it was a little bit fortunate, I thought, because I thought Tokushima in the first half, they looked probably the better side, they had the better chances, definitely, and Aurora didn't really get too much going. Osaka was left on the bench for the first half, which is a curious decision, because I thought he'd come in the last couple of games and been very good, especially his link-up with Akimoto, but he's not really partnered Juncker too much since both have been in the squad, but they did get 45 minutes, and Reds looked better in the second half. I don't think Juncker had too much to do, and he didn't have too many chances, but yeah, they got down the left. It was a well-worked goal with Yuruki cutting back to second A, but yeah, I think Vortis will look at that game and think that they could have had something out of it. Kakita hit the post and 10 minutes into the second half, and the better chances did fall for them, but again, yeah, not quite enough quality from Tokushima. It is a game where they'll look back and I think that they should have got something from that, but as it is, they stay right in that relegation place, right in those relegation battle, and Reds still with that half a chance of ACL. I think teams above them are playing better than Reds are at the moment, but yeah, you've got to be in the conversation. They still are after that 1-0 win.
Yes, most definitely. All right then, so the other game that was won on the weekend was Cerezo Osaka 3-1 over Yokohama FC. Of course, Yokohama FC, the cellar dwellers, they had to perk things up in a couple of games since the Olympic break, but I guess back to reality here against a Cerezo team that had not won in 11 league games. So again, if Yokohama FC were looking to carry on their decent recent form, then this would have been a great game for them to do it in. But on the flip side, Cerezo knew that if they were going to win any game, for the rest of the season, they had to do it against the cellar dwellers coming in. And they got a bit of a shock in the first 20 minutes when Kazuma Watanabe put Yokohama FC into the lead. But a quick fire brace from Thiago Pagnussat just past the half hour put Cerezo on top, and then Tatsuhiro Sakamoto wrapped things up 10 minutes into the second half. So we've seen it all from Yokohama FC in the past few games, Sam. They looked so great in the first game back after the Olympic break against Nagoya, but in the last couple of games, I don't know, the fact that they're still betting in so many new players is shining through, or perhaps they're just not that good to begin with.
Probably a little bit of both. I think that Nagoya game is a bit of a false dawn, because I thought against Sendai they deserved to lose, but they got away with a 0-0 draw. But I think that Sven Brodersen in goal is a very good player, and he's done well, and there wasn't too much he could do about the three goals conceded in this one. And Gabriel, I think, has done okay as well at the back, but there are still too many holes in the team. Even if you add these players in, there are still gaps in that defence that were taken advantage of, especially by Sakamoto. And it's just they plugged in what, four or five players that they got, but it's still not enough to plug that gap. And maybe once Felipe Vizeo and Salo Mineiro, they kind of get to fitness, because they've had one start between them in the three games so far, and they've not really hit the ground running as well as the more defensive players have. So maybe once if they can give them maybe a week or two, but it's got to be quick for them to get up to speed, because Yokohama really need results the way they are. What are they? Still 8 points adrift of safety with three teams to climb over. So they have to start quickly and they have to start winning games. And I just think they're going to have to bed these players in. I think it'll probably take a little bit too long. And there are still too many parts of this team that aren't good enough and aren't set up for J1 football. So, as great as that game against Nagoya was, it doesn't look like it's going to be continued for the rest of the season.
Absolutely, yeah. It looks like a false dawn now after the last couple of games. And, my old mate, Hideto Takahashi, was shown a straight red card with the 20 minutes to go that, basically extinguished any hopes Yokohama FC had of getting back into the game late on. Still adrift at the bottom, Yokohama FC. But for Cerezo, a positive result. And, obviously, as we've said, one that was a long time in coming, their first league win in 12 games. And it saw them move back above their Osaka rivals, Gamba, up a spot to 12th in the table. Now, Cerezo will come to Gamba's game against FC Tokyo last and probably spend about 15 seconds on it, because it was an absolute non-event. Before then, though, we do have a couple of other draws to deal with. And, at the end of the day, Sam, I guess they're like kissing your sister for the four teams involved in them. But, at kickoff, they were both important-looking games for a couple of different reasons. The Shimizu visit to Shonan was obviously two teams still involved in the relegation dogfight, and 3 points would have been huge for either. Ultimately, the spoils have been shared, though, and we can debate which team should be more frustrated about that. But obviously, Shonan took the lead on the half hour through Wellington, and then Yuito Suzuki equalised for S-Pulse right on half time. So from there, both teams obviously were obviously keen to win it and had their opportunities, but have both, I guess, been left frustrated at a missed opportunity as it ended 1-1.
Yeah, I think it was a game of really two very good goalkeepers, and Tani and Gonda both denied the opposition very well with a few good saves in this game. And it wasn't for a want of trying from either team. They were both went for it, but it's as always it seems to be in these sort of relegations, 6-pointer. I think get a cliche there in, but it always seems to end 1-1. It doesn't really help either team, and neither team, I don't think, overcommitted. They were a little bit wary of losing the game, and they'd probably just they've come away with it and probably accepted the 1-1 draw. I think it's better for Shimizu than it is for Shonan. I think Shonan had the better chances. Wellington, it was an absolute nightmare for Shimizu to deal with all game. Obviously, his header just absolute bullets it in. And once you get the cross into Wellington, there are very few defenders in the league that are going to be able to stop him. And Shimizu really struggled to actually just stop the crosses coming in. So Wellington caused plenty of problems. And maybe I think Shonan should have done a little bit more from those sort of situations. There was the one where he chests it down to Okamoto, who just off balance shot wide. So yeah, I think Shonan would be the more frustrated, especially as they're the ones sitting in the relegation zone. But on the balance of the play, Shimizu did give pretty much as good as they got, and then were denied by Tani at the other end. So it was probably a fair result, but not one that either team would be too delighted with.
No, and I mean, we did scoff, didn't we, when the news of Wellington returning to the J-League surfaced. But, you can't argue with the effectiveness of, when he's up and running, he's a quality player. And as you said, a nightmare for J1 defences to deal with. So if Shonan are going to dig their way out of trouble, and indeed they are in the 17th in the table, so they just need to move up one spot to be out of the drop zone, and they're just a point behind Tokushima and two behind Reysol as things stand. So it's far from over for Belmari, and they will they'll be scrapping all the way to the end of the season, as we know. So next to the other 1-1 draw, and it was another relegation dogfight contestant, Oita, who are of course second from bottom, and they hosted ACL spot chasing. That might be a bit of a stretch, but Sapporo were looking to obviously hang on to the coattails of the teams above them in the race for third. And again, both teams will be frustrated here, Sam, after a 1-1 draw. Hiroto Goya gave Oita an 11th minute lead before Tsuyoshi Ogashiwa equalised with just over 20 minutes left, after, it should be said, a lovely header down into his path from Jay Bothroyd. So, again, it's probably a tough one to take for both of these teams, with Sapporo having higher ambitions, of course, and Oita just scrapping for their lives. But at the end of the day and at the end of the game, it all came down to Shun Nagasawa from 6 yards out, didn't it? And to absolutely no one's surprise, he shot straight at the Sapporo goalkeeper, Takanori Sugano, and that was it. And the points were shared.
Yeah, those are the moments when you're down at the bottom and you get such a chance at the end of a game to win it. And yeah, it was a really poor effort straight at the goalkeeper, and I expected nothing less. So unfortunately for Oita, they go over the point. I think it's really frustrating for both teams. Sapporo are just, they're a team that have never really managed consistency in the last couple of years, and you just think they've turned a corner and they're going to really challenge at the top, towards the top of the league, with their victories over Tokyo and Urawa, and where they played very well. But yeah, they come to Oita and they just didn't really get going for a while. And they got their equaliser, but then just for whatever reason weren't able to press on. It was Oita that looked like they might have gone on to win it, but Oita, they tried a little few things differently. They're trying to mix things up. They gave Goya a start, his first start since signing for them, and that paid off. It was a really good header from him to score. It's not something he's done too much in J1, but other than that, from set pieces, they looked a bit of an issue for Sapporo, but from general play, they didn't really create too much, and they haven't done for a while. They're still leaving Nomura on the bench, and he might not be fit, but he's clearly, in my opinion, their strongest attacking player, and I'd want him to be playing as much as possible, because without him, the creativity is not really there, and the strike force, as we've seen, it's not quite good enough. It's not very clinical in general. So it was just another one of those games for Oita, and it just, they were there for the taking, I thought, Sapporo, and they just didn't manage it. So they remain in those relegation places. And yeah, what are they now? 6 points adrift. Yeah, they're running out of time, Oita.
Yeah, it doesn't look great for them. And while that game came down to, Shun Nagasawa from 6 yards out in the 94th minute. Well, Gunbar Osaka versus FC Tokyo on Saturday night came down to Kyosuke Tagawa versus Masaaki Higashiguchi from about 8 yards as the clock struck 90. And, well, I guess now we can see why Hajime Moriyasu didn't take Tagawa to the Olympics. Sam, just a horrible sliced finish. Never even hit the target, as we said, from close range when he was through on the keeper. The latest installment of a frustrating season for FC Tokyo, and at the end of a very frustrating game for supporters of both of these clubs. And, I think probably the less said about it, the better.
Yeah, the highlights didn't paint a great picture for either team. Neither team seemed to create too much. And, I think that Tagawa chance really kind of summed it up. He had so much time, but there was no composure. Complete rush of blood to the head and completely blazed it over. It was a horrible effort. And it's a shame for him, because earlier in the season, he was in decent form. He'd have absolutely taken that. But, the confidence seems to have gone. And this was, an awful miss at the end of a pretty awful game by the looks of it. So, these two teams, Tokyo and Gamba, they're kind of in this mid-table mediocrity at the moment. I don't see either being in the ACL. I don't see either being relegated. And they might just meander their way through to the end of the season, which for the clubs like Gamba and FC Tokyo is fairly unacceptable. So maybe they can get going in a cup competition and give their supporters something to cheer about, because they certainly had nothing in this 90 minutes.
We'll just move off it, because I'll just get even more and more frustrated. So 0-0 at the Panasonic Stadium, and that is our wrap of all 10 games from match day 25. So what's coming up in the next week, you ask? Well, let me tell you, on Wednesday there is a full round of top flight fixtures. Match day 26 will be played. Sam, you've already told us, and it's the obvious choice. I don't blame you at all. Tosu hosting Yokohama F. Marinos is your pick of the round. That is third hosting second. And, it should be an absolutely terrific game to watch. If you were able to catch a game on Wednesday, whatever time of day it is around the world, listeners, I would, hope you would be able to check that one out. But obviously there are, there's intrigue up and down the league and interesting fixtures. Obviously a lot of people will have eyes on Fukuoka hosting Kawasaki. Fukuoka are well supported in the international J-League community, and they're 10th placed Avispa side. Well, could they be the latest to stifle the defending champions and formerly runaway leaders, who are now protecting just a 4-point buffer at the top? So we won't go through every game, of course, Sam, but what are your expectations for Fukuoka hosting Kawasaki then? And do you think Avispa could carry on that recent trend of teams who are able to frustrate the champions?
Well, they're very difficult to beat, and they've got that one way of playing, and it's based on a lot of set pieces. So if Taniguchi's not there, you definitely lose a commanding force there to deal with those. And Avispa have the players to hurt Kawasaki, and defensively they're very stubborn, and that's worked really for Kashiwa and Hiroshima in the last couple of games. The worry would be that Douglas Grawley, I think, is out suspended, which is leaves a bit of a hole in that Avispa backline. You'd maybe think that Damian would be put on to Daiki Mia, who I'd imagine would come in and maybe try and bully him a little bit. But Avispa have certainly got the players and the style of play to frustrate Kawasaki. I would be surprised if Avispa went out and won the game. But I definitely could see another frustrating afternoon and maybe a draw for Kawasaki. But it's a big game for Frontale. They've got to show something after the last two games. They've got to get back into winning ways, because you've got to expect, if you're a Frontale supporter or player, that Marinos are just going to keep going the way that they are. And so that means Frontale have to win games, and it's going to be a difficult one away at Avispa. But I think they're getting close to must-win games for Frontale.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't want to throw you under the bus, mate, but can patrons, JTalk patrons, expect one of your patented match day reviews shortly after the full-time whistle on Wednesday night?
They can. The J-League have not been very kind to me in scheduling all these to kick off at the same time, so I'll have to have various sets of eyes on things. But, I'll have a report up hopefully as quickly as I can after these games. But yeah, it might be slightly difficult. I don't know. I'm going to have to find a few more screens from somewhere.
Or another couple of pairs of eyes, yeah. Fair enough then. All right, well, yeah, so then to match day 27, that will take a place over both days this coming weekend. Frustratingly, I'm sure, for Sam, kicking off at 2 p.m. Japan time on Saturday. Sam, it is Sapporo hosting Kawasaki, so at least you've got that to look forward to from the Sapporo Dome. Yeah, five games on Saturday and the other five on Sunday. Well, we've mentioned Yokohama F. Marino's hosting Kashima, so I guess we don't want to do, we could, if it's the obvious choice, Sam, we could do that also as your pick of the round for the neutral, but I don't know, could we branch slightly further out and pick another game? Maybe it is Sapporo Kawasaki, I don't know, but another game that you would recommend for a neutral to check out over the weekend?
Yeah, it's difficult because obviously that Marinos Kashima is the game to look out for. Mm. The Osaka Derby in a normal season, you'd be picking that out, but it's kind of a non-existent mid-table game at the moment. So I'm going to try and look for... I'm going to go for Shonan versus Urara, actually, because Shonan are a team that... there's always something happens when Shonan play Urara. Either the goal that goes in and then this doesn't count, or you get ineligible players that they had earlier in the season. So I don't know exactly what to expect from Shonan versus Urara, but something will happen. So I think that'll be the game. And both teams obviously have a lot to play for as well.
Yeah, that is a terrific shout, actually. And you're absolutely right, yeah. Goodness knows what's going to happen, but yeah, absolutely something. Okamoto will probably have two goals disallowed by VAR or something, just to throw another spanner in the works of his season. Yeah, I mean, ordinarily, I'd be licking my chops to boo Yoshinori Muto heartily as Kobe entertain FC Tokyo, but I don't know whether I can summon the strength at this stage of proceedings and... yeah, well, I guess I'll just have to wish him the best and, hope he's in the ACL next season because FC Tokyo almost certainly won't be. So, yeah, I don't know, maybe a month ago that game was shaping as a potential pick for you as a match of the round, Sam. But, yeah, Tokyo have gone right off the boil again. And, so that Kobe would be expecting to win that, especially if Yuya Osako is fit and ready to play by the time the next weekend rolls around. All right, so, there's plenty to look forward to in the next week. As we said, interesting fixtures up and down the table. We hope you're able to check out some J1 action, listeners, if you do get the chance. Terrific to catch up with Stuart, of course, Sam, with, F. Marino's flying, and, it really does shape as a fascinating last few months of the season, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. We've got lots of battles going on. I really hope for that last game of the season, Marinos versus Frontale, to being a title decider. And then, lots of teams in the running for the ACL and the relegation battle. So, as always, at this time of the season, it's shaping up to be a really exciting climax to the J-Leagues. And, I can't wait to watch this next week unfold because we've got, a really good set of fixtures.
Most definitely. All right, so we will leave it there. That is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Stuart Woodward for his time on this week's episode, and we'd also like to thank Daniel, one of our patrons, for his question. Sorry, Daniel, if we weren't able to answer it with much clarity, but you can, as we said, you can throw a blanket over five teams in the race for third, so your guess is as good as ours at this point of proceedings. But thanks for your question, and thanks to all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. All right, so Sam will be back for our patrons with a review of Match Day 26 in midweek, and then we'll be back to round it all up, including Match Day 27, of course, in next week's podcast. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.